Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, but holy moly guacamole, there's a lot that we could cover today. There's going to be more headlines that we cannot get to today than the ones that we can get to. But let me acknowledge here at the outset on this Friday, May the 24th, that no matter what else happens today, today is the day the Lord has made. We will rejoice. We will be glad in it. We will walk the faith that we possess in Jesus Christ out into the world that he so loves in ways that honor him, no matter what. And so I know there are many of you who are hoping that I will discuss and maybe in depth the public ranting between the President of the United States and the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. I'm going to do that at the end of hour two. I'm actually going to unpack that. We're going to talk about prayer. We're going to talk about the use of prayer in public. We're going to talk about the word intervention. We're going to talk about what it means in the Trump family, where addiction is a reality. We're going to talk about when interventions happen and what they look like, because I know that that is, you know, that's actually a personal reality for many listeners. And so just know I'm aware that you are desirous to have some input on how to have that conversation over the weekend in your own families. And certainly as folks gather for Memorial Day weekend, there will be opportunities to discuss all kinds of things. And we want to do so in ways that honor Jesus. We do not want to do so as the way some are doing so in public right now today. Okay. Theresa May is resigning from the position of Prime Minister of Great Britain. We are going to talk about that in depth on Tuesday with David Aikman. And we're also going to talk about the landslide election in India, re-election of Modi. And so those conversations you can expect us to have here on Mornings with Carmen on Tuesday. The Alabama State House has been in the news of late for passing the most restrictive abortion bill in history, but they're back in the news today for another bill, this one on marriage. This is a bill to actually end marriage licenses in Alabama. What might this actually be about? Well, if you consider that, you know, part of why Alabama, probably a bigger than part of why the Alabama State House passed the abortion bill that they did, was to provoke the Supreme Court of the United States to take up the issue, revisit the issue of Roe v. Wade. Well, my guess is that this bill related to marriage licenses is likewise an attempt to provoke the Supreme Court to revisit its decision in the Obergefell case in 2015. So that would be related to same-sex marriage. So I think that we will continue that conversation next week as well. Julian Assange is in the headline news as well. He has been indicted by the United States under the Espionage Act. You are going to hear a lot of people discussing this as related to or an attack on journalism. I think there are going to be many, many, many storylines to suss out in the Julian Assange conversation. And so I'm not prepared to do that today, but I will let you know that that is a conversation I intend to have as well, because I think there are some very significant First Amendment conversations to have. So what we are going to talk about today with Matthew Hawkins, from formerly of the ERLC, we're going to talk about a number of other headlines related to abortion and the culture war. We're going to talk about the enforcement of laws and whether or not, you know, judicatories can decide not to enforce laws that are on the books. And then what happens in society when that takes place? And if we've got time, he and I are going to discuss the question, can a man have a baby? That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen. All right. right, Matt Hawkins is back in the house. You can follow him at MT Hawk. Hey, Matt, welcome back, man.
Good morning, Carmen.
Good morning. Okay, so you've got some grilling plans this weekend. That's what I hear from Paul
Absolutely.
Perot. So I'd
Absolutely.
Like to know what's going to be on the grill. What's going to be on
you
the grill?
You don't want to ask him that. It's going to. Sounds too good.
I think we're going to do a little surf and turf. We've got some steaks, some salmon, and some shrimp. I think we're going to hit all three.
Nice. Okay. Well, surf and
turf.
I was telling
Paul, my only debate is whether I go buy the cedar planks or whether I take the chainsaw down the hill and cut myself some.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because the emergency room does not have significant plans for the weekend.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly.
No. Too many people make bad choices on Memorial Day weekend. Go buy some cedar planks, man.
What could possibly go wrong?
Help the economy. Go buy some cedar planks. Yeah, what could go wrong?
Sounds
okay,
good.
So
you do understand from a Minnesotan standpoint that this just sounds, you know, for Midwesterners, we don't get this very well.
Yeah, I know, that's okay. We're talking to people all over the world, Paul.
True enough.
And so they don't even understand why we're doing Memorial Day. So there you go.
Okay.
Point made. So Matt, let's get on to a subject that people can understand, and that is the effort to work against human trafficking. We have this really wonderful. Yeah. I need some good news this morning. There's so much bad news out there.
Sure.
So brief us in. Yeah. This is some really good news in terms of the anti-human trafficking front.
Sure. So to back up, human trafficking actually is modern day slavery that we and a lot of people have been fighting for many years now. There's some human trafficking legislation done back as early as 2001 under the Bush administration and with more iterations at the federal level periodically. But beyond the legal, kind of the law enforcement side of human trafficking, there's a really, really huge need for civil society to come in and help victims of human trafficking recover and reenter society. Carmen, I don't need to tell you, it's predominantly ladies, but also boys and men who've been trafficked, they need a lot of care. And it's difficult, hard work. There are a lot of psychological injuries and emotional injuries that people have to work through. And people of faith in America, and Baptists included, have been on the front lines of that for a number of years now. And so it was neat to see this week the FBI honor some Southern Baptist groups who've been on the front lines of doing this. And they have a number of shelters that have been working. I think this one was in particular the Baptist Friendship House. They honored the director, Kay Bennett, who was a Send Relief missionary with the North American Mission Board, who accepted the award on behalf of this group. And it's a really, really special acknowledgement, I think. We as Christians are supposed to go about our ministry and service without seeking praise of others. But I think it's a really good opportunity, both for our country and for people of faith, to be recognized when they are spending time helping the healing of victims of human trafficking.
So this is one of those in the spirit of let your light so shine before others that they would see your good works and glorify God who is in heaven. This is an opportunity, for us to point to kingdom principles and kingdom realities, show the dignity of every person, and actually activate the church in ways that positively impact society by bringing real transformative change, restorative change to people's lives. So thanks, Matt, for bringing us that story this morning. Yeah.
No problem. Oh, and I was going to say, some people get really in depth and can really engage and volunteer or, staff a shelter in a heavy way. But, Southern Baptists, they send, they fill backpacks with supplies. These people have literally nothing except the clothes on their back. And so they need kind of the basics of life. They need clothes and shelter and food. And Southern Baptists, of course, are great at providing all three of those.
Okay. So do they go to sendrelief.org if they want to know more?
I think so.
I think so. Okay. Yeah. So let's pivot here. You and I frequently talk about the topic of abortion. The word culture war is one that I resist, but I recognize that it's still a part of the mainstream conversation. So when we come back from the break, can we talk about culture wars in general? And then there was a take on this topic posted in Bloomberg's opinion section, and it's been then sort of rebroadcast by Yahoo over and over and over again. So there's a lot of folks out there reading this piece, this technically a Bloomberg piece, on the subject of the maybe quote-unquote latest front in America's culture war. And I'd love to just unpack this article with you a little bit. So that's what Matt Hawkins and I are going to do here. We're going to converse in public in just a minute here on Mornings with Carmen. So, Matt, I read this article, and I thought to myself, I'd really like to have a conversation with somebody about this particular article. I read it at Yahoo News, but it's actually a Bloomberg piece, and it's entitled "The Abortion Debate." Let me scroll up to the headline. "The Abortion Debate is Not Part of the Culture Wars." Okay, so that was a little confusing to me. That was a little provocative. Just brief people in on what the article is about, and then there's some actual sentences in it that I'd just like to say, what does this sentence mean to you? Like, how should we talk about this?
Yeah, sure. So the author is essentially saying that we're all going the same direction. We don't have it's not a matter of sides or issues. It's only a matter of pace. And so the idea is that progressives move down the cultural they're making progress, quote unquote, down the cultural, river. And the conservatives eventually get there. They're just slower. And so there's really not a battle between left and right. It's just a matter between speedy people and slow people. And it was it's a pretty interesting article, a pretty compelling kind of thing. He cites a pattern in research called the inverse U-shaped curve. And so they say at first the difference between two parties on an issue is small, and then the Democratic Party begins to shift rapidly, and then the partisan gap widens eventually. Quote, Democrats hit a plateau just as Republicans are starting to shift, and this causes the gap to almost as rapidly to close almost as rapidly as it opens. So there's a lot I get kind of what they're saying. They're bringing political science to this to bear. They make a compelling point
but it makes me mad, which is why I thought I should better talk with
why
somebody
about it. Why does it make you mad?
Okay, because it makes me mad because as a person who is a person of convictions that are actually based in reality and based in revealed truth, it makes me, mad's the wrong word, right? It troubles me. It frustrates me. It raises my ire that somebody would say, well, you know, at some point, Carmen, you are going to move. You will be moved.
Right.
The culture will move you. And sort of that stand firm, biblical business is going to just be washed away by culture. And I resist that. I mean, I actually stand in direct resistance to the idea that the convictions that I hold because the Bible tells me so, because they are God's revealed truth about who he is, who people are, his will for human relationships. And because the Bible says that, that first of all, according to this research, that makes me a slow moving Republican, which it suggests that Democrats could not stand firm, will not be able to stand firm on life issues, will not be able to stand firm on the definition of marriage. I mean, that, if you claim to be a Democrat and you're not already swept up in this, then you're not really a Democrat. Like that you could make that argument from this article. So he moves away from the culture war language, which I appreciate, but you are exactly right. This actually basically says culture is a river and you can't resist it. Now, I think culture is a garden. I mean, I'm going with the, Genesis 1, culture is a garden and we are the cultivators of it. So if I don't like the harvest of unrighteousness that's being produced in the culture in which I live, then I till the soil of the culture. I replant. I plant the word. I seed it with truth. I get out there and I work the land of my culture in the time and place where I live, in order that a harvest of righteousness might actually be produced tomorrow, for the Lord and God I love and serve. So that's what I'm doing. I am not living in culture as a river. So I don't know. Now you've heard my.
Well, I'd say a couple things. In retrospect, we should have had Paul play Billy Joel's "We Didn't Start the Fire" for this segment.
Nice. All right. So he's now working on that.
And you're right to go to Genesis 1 for talking about the culture change. We as Christians understand that there's been a cultural war from the Garden of Eden and forward. So to some extent, you know, this guy makes a point that Christians ought to pay attention to, in that this stuff's always changing. But look, there was a time when our nation trended into, or kind of started with, legalized slavery of human beings. We eventually pulled out of that. And so Christians ought to be involved in shaping culture as much as we might be affected in adapting to it. I take a lot of encouragement and direction from 1 Peter. They give us some direction. Peter's writing to the diaspora of believers. Dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles to abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul. Right, there's the fundamental cultural war. Live such good lives among the pagans that, though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he exists. So I take from that, it's not so much whether the cultural war exists or it doesn't. Of course it does. The question for Christians is how we position ourselves. What is our attitude amidst those culture wars? How do we present ourselves? How do we provide witness to the gospel? Are we going to, you know, shake our hands in the air and yell at people? Or are we going to provide an invitation to them and adorn the gospel of Christ with our words and actions and rhetoric? That's a big difference. Russell Moore, you've heard, constantly emphasizes that when we look to Scripture, Jesus and the apostles are always providing soft words to non-believers predominantly, and the harsher words for Christians in order to live up to the kingdom, the standards of the kingdom of God. And so I think in the culture war, those are there. That's what we need to be most concerned about, is how we order our attitudes.
Okay, so as you and I are sending, you and I are going out into cultural conversations today. We mm-hmm. want to do so in ways that honor Jesus. We're speaking with listeners right now who want to do the same thing. Like, right, we want to be people who, we do speak a word of truth, but we speak it in love. We speak it in measured tones. We listen before we talk. Do you have like a, I have a phrase. My phrase is tell me more. If I'm in the middle of a conversation with somebody and I actually like feel the ire rising up within me, I realize that I'm going to have to take a little more time to hear them out and settle myself before I really feel capable and competent to bring truth to bear. So my phrase is tell me more. Do you have like a go-to conversational tool?
Yeah. I think that's a great positioning. I think my critique. So I spent a lot of time in worldview training and comparative religions and that kind of thing. And I think we as Christian, the missing component in like a lot of the worldview quote unquote training, a lot of the apologetics training is listening. We can feel like we understand a subject. We feel like we can understand a different faith, intellectually speaking, and then not actually know anybody who believes that stuff. I'm thinking in particular most recently about my Muslim friends. Someone can take a crash course in the history of Islam and think they understand everything that a Muslim believes. It's just not true. It's the truth about making assumptions of us. And so I've been convicted that we really need to, like you do, ask questions to really understand where a person is coming from, right? Jesus did this in the Gospels. Paul did this. They're recognizing where their audience is, and they're adapting their message to that audience. Well, you can't adapt your message to the audience if you don't know where your audience is. And so, diagnostic questions where, like, tell me more. That's extremely valuable. And it puts yourself in not a dictatorial position, but you're eliciting, what somebody actually believes. And then that gives you information to better engage them with your own beliefs. I think a position of listening and really kind of some reconnaissance to think about it in that respect is really helpful in having actual productive conversations and not just arguing.
Okay, so thank you. We did not have time today to get to these very big questions about what happens in a culture when those who are supposed to enforce the law don't. I'm thinking here. Yeah. Across a range of topics, so we're going to have to return to that. But we've also got this just huge conversation about transgenderism and the embrace of it at younger and younger ages. So I don't know, Matt, you and I might have to carve out more than one That's segment fine. Sometime, but thank you so very much for being with us today. Hey,
you're welcome.
Go ahead.
Give my best to Chelsea. Your next guest is Chelsea Sobolik.
Yes.
I'm a big fan. She replaced me when I left the ERLC. So you have former and current ERLC policy directors on your show back to back.
I know.
Back to back. She's awesome.
We do love Chelsea. Thank you so much. Hey, Matt, we'll grab you a coffee soon. That is Matthew Hawkins. You can find him at MT Hawk. Hey, obviously, I'll be right back with Chelsea Sobolik. All right, so sometimes we get ourselves into hot water that we do not actually intend to wade into or swim into. So I'm in the middle of a text discourse on the text line, which, remember, you can always text me at 877-933-2484. So we had a listener who yesterday tried to participate in the conversation here about proposing words that would be antonyms to gossip. Except instead of texting me their ideas about proposed antonyms to gossip, they texted someone else who took great offense that this listener was calling them a gossip and thought they needed antonyms to gossip. Which I'm not laughing. I'm not like laughing. That's not laughter. I'm not laughing at. I'm like laughing in compassion with, because we've all done this. We've all texted the wrong person. We've all sent the email that went to everybody instead of just to the one. So maybe this is the check and double check portion of my encouragement this morning. It did lead to a conversation, and so we are simply praying today that conversation would be well received and the relationship restored and an opportunity to talk about blessing would emerge. Okay, next up, Chelsea Sobolik. She's got a piece posted at the USA Today about our responsibility not just to protect the unborn in the pro-life conversation, but to figure out how we are going to come alongside and help women who have all those babies. That's next up here on Mornings with Carmen.
Is the vision of America as a melting pot a dream worth keeping? This is Jim Garlow. In 1908, a Jewish immigrant named Israel Zangwill penned a play titled The Melting Pot, hence coining that term. Here was the essence of the biblical view of assimilation. America is God's crucible, the great melting pot where all races of Europe are melting and reforming. To all immigrants, Zangwill went on to say, "Enter the crucible with you all. God is making the American." When the Israelites were exiled to Babylon, the Lord said concerning the new land, "Seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, so will you." That should be the attitude of every immigrant, to help their new country prosper and improve, becoming a blessing to it. Again, the Bible is clear. This is Jim Garlow.
Last night, based on my stalking her on Twitter, Chelsea Sobolik was at a big fancy event, and now she's on a train. So she's living a much more glamorous life than most of the rest of us. She is the policy director of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. She's a former House aide who worked on pro-life, religious freedom, adoption, and foster care policy issues. She is the author of Longing for Motherhood, Holding On to Hope in the Midst of Childlessness. And she is a friend of this show, and she's been here before. Chelsea, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
Where was the big fancy thing last night?
It was at a hotel right off Central Park. So super
Why you're on a train, because you were in New York, and now you're headed back to D.C., yes? Okay.
I'm headed back
Very
to
nice.
D.C.
So nice. Okay,
the same train, but...
We're gonna join you. We're gonna keep you as long as we can on this cell phone connection, and because I really wanted to have the opportunity to walk around in this piece that's posted at USA Today that you are the author of, and the lead is people who oppose abortion must protect the tiny life inside the woman and also make sure she has the resources she needs. It's not one or the other. So I would love for you to just make your case that to be pro-life is not to just be pro-life for the unborn, but to be pro-life for the woman who is the vessel in which God is incubating that new life.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I really appreciate the opportunity to chat about this. I am so passionate about carving out a space in these conversations to talk about the dignity of both women and their unborn little one. I have seen so much in the public square recently seeming to make it a binary choice of either you care for the unborn and you don't care for the woman, or you only care for the woman and don't care for the unborn. And I was trying to say, listen, we have to do both. We have to provide the resources, whether that's through policy or volunteering or financial means, to care for women and particularly vulnerable women who might choose abortion, while also not diminishing our care for unborn. I think people kind of see it as a binary choice of either we do this or we do that, and it's not. We have to do both hand in hand in order to truly make the case for being holistically pro-life. And, you know, we also care about the unborn. We care about the unborn baby, but we care about that baby and that child and that human after they are born. There have been multiple people recently saying, there's an Alabama state representative that said, and I'm quoting him, he said, why should we allow children to be born if they'll just end up in foster care or in jail? And people saying, is it really loving to allow these children to be born if they're just going to end up in vulnerable situations? And to that I would say, we do not get to determine who lives and who dies in the womb, and that means we have a lot of work to do in foster care, in with our prison population, in all these different populations. There's a lot of work to be done, but I think we can do hold both in our hands as we walk forward and care for life.
Absolutely. So, Chelsea, this is a part of your own story. You are a person who, you know, your mom had a choice to make. She was not in a position to raise you herself. And so she made what you describe here as the brave and courageous decision to allow you to be adopted by a couple who were in a position to love and to raise you. Talk about the need to cultivate within the life of the church, within, you know, among Christians in the culture. Talk about the need to actually like fan the flame of an adoption culture. If we are going to be pro-life for the unborn, then we're going to have to be intentionally like become like the church of adoption for those who are born.
Yes, absolutely. And that's such a good point you brought up. Not everyone can be a parent, and that's okay. And not everyone wants to be a parent, and that's okay too. And we don't need to vilify those people who can or don't want to be parents for whatever reason. But the church must be the ones with open arms saying, we are here. We are more than ready to care for the children who, for whatever reason, don't have a safe, permanent, loving home. Caring for vulnerable children is a biblical directive. We don't have a choice. But as Christians, we get to stand in that gap and care for those children, whether it be through foster care, through volunteering, through adoption. You know, not everyone is called to adopt, but everyone is called to care for the fatherless and the orphan in some way. And I think the more that pastors and churches talk about caring for vulnerable people, and then, you know, if a family adopts, they wrap around that family and provide them the resources they need, that will help spur others on to caring for vulnerable children, again, whether it's becoming foster parents or adopting children. Again, it is biblical. We are following the footsteps of our Savior to love our neighbor, and adoption is loving the woman who, not to abort her child, but to bear that child, loving our neighbor through loving that child or the vulnerable population surrounding those people's circumstances.
Okay, Chelsea, you and I have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to have I want to ask you two more questions. One of them, I would love for you to walk around with us in a Twitter exchange that took place on a particular Twitter feed, and I think that the question was designed actually to shame pro-life people. The tweet was, "Dear pro-life friends, what have you," and then, you know, in scare quotes, "personally, done to support lower-income single moms?" At the time that you posted your piece on USA Today, so as of Tuesday, that tweet had 13,000 personal responses of what people had actually done to support lower-income single moms. That's pretty extraordinary exchange. I'd love for you to share a little bit with us about that. But then also, I would love to get into the conversation about whether or not I can actually be pro-life. Can I be pro-life if I say to myself, well, I'm personally against abortion, but I recognize the need for laws in the land that permit it? I think that for Christians is the critical, that is a critical conversation we have to be able to have. Can I actually be pro-life, really pro-life, if I'm willing to support laws that enable and actually, you know, allow for the cultural reality of abortion? So those two conversations with Chelsea Sobolik in just a minute when we come back.
You say I love when I can't feel a thing. You say I am strong when I think I'm weak. You say
continuing our conversation with Chelsea Sobolik. Chelsea is the policy director in Washington, D.C. for the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Church. And I don't mind just saying here in public and on live radio, she's just a woman who I love and respect. And she speaks so clearly and so both passionately and compassionately about the issues of the day. You should definitely follow her on Twitter at ChelsPat. You should definitely get her book, Longing for Motherhood, Holding On to Hope in the Midst of Childlessness. She's just a precious friend and a tremendous colleague on the forefront of these issues in Washington, D.C. So pray for Chelsea as she does her job. So Chelsea, I want to ask, how are we helping women? I just want to give you that lead, and then let's circle back around to the question about whether or not I can be theoretically against killing a human being, but for laws that permit human beings to be killed. So start with, how are we helping women?
It's a great question. So there are so many ways that I look around my personal community in D.C. I look around friends and family members I know, and then I look around social media and see so many ways pro-lifers are serving vulnerable women. Some of them are serving quietly. You know, they don't send off a tweet every time they donate or go volunteer and this and that. But like you said, there is this tweet last week, and it has over 13,000 replies of things people are personally doing to support single mothers or vulnerable mothers and support the cause of being pro-life. And range from driving a woman to a doctor's appointment to donating material resources or financial resources, or becoming a CASA, which is a court-appointed special advocate for children, or a foster parent, or all these different things. But I really, like I said, they're serving silently and faithfully, and they're doing the good work. So I was so encouraged. Like you said earlier, I think this tweet is meant to be a little sarcastic. That's how I read it. Love just scrolling through and seeing so many friends of mine that replied and highlighting the work they're doing or they've seen other people doing. And so I think there is a lot of quiet service happening, which is, it's so encouraging to the listeners or the people that saw these tweets. And again, to the watching world who is saying what is being done for women. And so I think there's a lot to be encouraged by. Certainly there's a lot of work to still do, but we should be extremely encouraged by what's happening.
And I think that, you know, we need to say to people, look, this is not about bragging in public. This is actually about letting the light be shown forth in such a way that people would get it and they would glorify God. One of the reasons that people don't think anything is happening and that pro-lifers are not actually doing anything on the behalf of women who find themselves pregnant in challenging circumstances, is that we don't tell anybody. And if we don't tell anybody, then nobody knows. And then therefore they assume we're not doing anything. And so, so this is not about, this is not about bragging in public. This is actually about letting the world know what the church is doing, what Christians are doing, what people of faith are doing, what people who are pro-life are doing, tangibly, to tangibly make a difference, in the lives of others. Okay, Chelsea, we got to dig around in this subject, and that is, can I be theologically and theoretically against the taking of another human life? But, you know, because I'm a member of a society like this one, I can be for laws that permit the taking of a human life for any reason or no reason at all.
That's a great question. And to that, I would say it is incredibly intellectually dishonest to say, I personally wouldn't have an abortion, I'm personally opposed, but I would still support laws. And the reason that is because two things. Number one, to be holistically pro-life, we need to be pro-life at every turn. So we need to be pro-life in the policies we enforce. We need to be pro-life with our giving. We need to be pro-life with our time. We need to all fit into a broad pro-life worldview. And then the second reason is, if you're truly pro-life, you would want, I don't want to make a moral judgment on someone who would say those things, but again, it is intellectually dishonest to be personally pro-life and then against pro-life policies. I think the discussions that have been had with people that have said those things is seeing the lack of policies that wrap around women holistically. But we can't kid ourselves. The abortion lobby is out to have abortion at every turn, all the way up till birth, and make the taxpayers pay for it. So what the abortion lobby, you know, for so long, their talking point was safe, legal, and rare, and the curtain has been pulled back. And we now see, we've seen it in New York, we've seen it in Virginia with Governor Northam's comments. We have seen what we've known for so long, what the abortion lobby is really about, and that is abortion, taxpayer-funded for abortion. So to that, I would say we need to push for laws that protect women and protect the unborn. And so I would challenge people that would say that type of, you know, I'm personally pro-life, but against the laws that protect life. I would say they need to sit down and really think hard about those intellectual inconsistencies.
So Chelsea, one of the things that I appreciate about the piece that you have posted at USA Today, and again, let me remind our listeners, I'm talking to Chelsea Sobolik. She is the policy director for the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. She works in Washington, D.C. She's a former House aide, and her areas of policy interest are pro-life, religious freedom, adoption, foster care, on and on and on, all the things that we're passionate about here on this program. Chelsea, I appreciate not only what you are saying, but the way in which you are saying it. And so I want to compliment you for the way that you are having this conversation in public. And because you're willing to have the conversation in public, you're actually teaching us how to do the same. And so thank you not only for what you've got posted at USA Today about what it really means to be pro-life in terms of protecting not only the unborn from abortion, but also caring for women. Thank you for that. But also thank you just day in and day out, not only for the advocacy on behalf of these issues on Capitol Hill, but for the way in which you advocate. You are walking the gospel out in what I would describe as gospel ways, in ways that are consistent with the gospel. And so thank you for being with us here today on Mornings with Carmen. Thank you for doing what you do every single day in Washington, D.C.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Safe travels. All right, friends, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back. Okay, so how are you walking your faith out into the world that God so loves? So the conversations that we have already had here today are conversations about what's happening in the culture, other people's interpretation of what's happening in the culture, and a challenge to each one of us to actually engage in the conversations that are taking place this day, taking place over this weekend, taking place over grills, lots of grilling. And so how in those environments with real people who may or may not know the gospel, who may or may not be living a life that's actually aligned with the gospel, how are you going to talk with them in a way that honors Jesus about these topics, about the conversations of the day? That's actually what we're seeking to do here. This is not just a news program, and I'm not just trying to tell you what I think about things. I'm trying to bring the mind of Christ to bear on the matters of the day, and then equip you to not just be out there giving people another piece of your mind, but actually giving them the very piece of the mind of Christ. That's what people need. And so, you know, one of the tools that we've offered up today is simply the tool of tell me more. In a conversation with other people this weekend, get them to tell you more about what they're thinking, why they're thinking what they're thinking. And if you just ask that question, like, why are you thinking that? And they have no idea. You should be in a position to tell them why you think what you think, because it is aligned with the mind of Christ on that particular matter. All right, we got to take a quick break, and then we'll be back for the second hour of Mornings with Carmen. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.